Catherine.
Thanks everyone for coming out, especially the people who came from far away. That's really cool. I have not been to a meeting outside of Santa Barbara, so I think that's really cool for your recovery. I guess I'm going to start with, I get really nervous speaking in front of people, so even if it's just one person sometimes.
I feel really sad being out here. I really didn't, like, being in ACA when somebody read that you're willing to feel your feelings, that's definitely something that I got from coming to ACA. And in the last week, I've really been forced to feel my feelings. I've been stuck with my foot hurting and feeling really stuck, but really I was in a comfortable home and had everything that I needed. And that's part of ACA too. It reminds me to look at those things. I could look at things in the negative way, but what it forced me to do to be home and to have my foot up was to really deepen my relationship with my higher power, which is something I didn't have before coming to ACA either. As a kid, I went to a lot of AA meetings with my dad, and he really liked speaker meetings, and I just ate the cakes for the birthdays and the cookies. And I didn't really know what it was all about. My dad was the alcoholic, and my mom had a ton of dysfunction in her family. And so I'm like an ACA, like when it says adult children of alcoholics and dysfunctional families would be what I've experienced. And so as a child, I was raised primarily by my mom, and also somewhere around seven by someone who I called my stepdad for many years. My dad was in and out of my life, and I knew from very young, my mom told me that he had a problem, and I didn't really know much about alcoholism. Even when I came into ACA, I didn't know what alcoholism really was, because I didn't believe that it was something that someone could be powerless over. And so much of my healing with my family has just, especially my dad, has come from understanding what alcoholism is and what dysfunction is and what it does to people, especially children. And even as adults, I mean, until you go through the healing process, until I went through it, I couldn't understand what was going on around me. I remember that as a child, there were some sober periods with my dad, and I knew that as well. So I knew that that could occur. And with my mom, she was like, when you look from the outside, a really good mom. And I thought coming into these rooms that, like, I had all of my needs met. And physically speaking, I had clothes and a house and, you know, all the things. But emotionally, there was a lot that I don't feel I got, and it was really hard to look at. It was so much easier coming into ACA to look at my dad's stuff, and I was really surprised to find out that there was stuff on my mom's side as well. When I got into my late teens, by that time, My dad was only in my life for like a chunk of time between maybe 7 and 14 that I remember. And then it kind of all went downhill. And I have a lot of really bad memories. I have to really think hard to think of the good memories with him. And after I turned 18, it got really bad with him. And my mom's way to cope with everything is just to be angry. And so I've been angry for a really long time. And then I ended up dating somebody who was an alcoholic that it was, I'm really grateful, even though that was a really, really hard situation, because he went out while we were together. His mom is who brought me to a Nar-Anon meeting. And I went to Nar-Anon and I sat there and I kept on sharing that I didn't understand why I was there and that I didn't have an alcoholic in my life. At that time, my boyfriend at the time was actually sober. And my dad, I had decided I just couldn't really have a relationship with. Over the years, I've realized I just can't trust him anymore. Everything's a lie. And so to me, I was like, I don't know why I'm sitting here because I'm not enabling anybody. And so I stayed. Something told me to stay. And then I remember the person that was at the front door giving hugs came up to me at the end of the meeting because I always avoided the hugs. And the greeter at the front was like, I really want my hug. And can we talk? And she sat down with me, and it was so weird for me to have somebody who I didn't know care about why I was there or what I was going through. And so at the end of that talk, she said, I have something that you might be interested in, and she gave me the little ACA welcome book. And I went through it, and I just couldn't believe it. I was like, somebody wrote a little tiny mini book all about me. And the interesting thing about ending up in ACA for me is that because of going to AA meetings with my dad and because of never seeing him be able to stay sober, I didn't think it worked. I just didn't think that it worked. I didn't understand it. I didn't think it worked. And I thought it was just a place to continue to talk about your problems. And I honestly thought that AA was a cult for a little bit. My ex-boyfriend was very, at that time when I was dating him, when he went out, we had these conversations. And now I look back and I'm like, well, A, I didn't know because I never looked into it. I only heard about recovery, like going to Al-Anon. I remember my dad tried to commit suicide and he was in the hospital out here, and as I was leaving, this nurse handed me a piece of paper with and all the Al-Anon meetings, and I was just like, I'm not gonna do that. So I honestly didn't know. And so when I saw this pamphlet of ACA, I was like, well, if I were to go to anything, this is what I would go to. And by that point in time, I had a really terrible emotional alcoholic-induced breakup with who I was dating. I felt terrible. I felt like, how was I so stupid to end up in a relationship with an alcoholic? Because I know what they're like, and it just sounded terrible. And so I didn't go. I actually stopped going to Nar-Anon, and I just kept on looking at this pamphlet. And it was definitely higher power that brought on all of it, in all honesty. But the person that came into my life that ended up saying, well, I went to ACA in like the 80s, I'll go with you. And I had only met her like twice. This is my second time talking to her. And she, we set a date. We went to ACA. It was sometime, I think, in July. I'm coming up on 2 years. And I sat in the meeting and I was just like, oh my God, there's something I need to do here. I have to see this out. And shortly after I got to ACA, I got a commitment, and I really didn't know if it was going to work at all. I had no idea what I was getting into. I didn't know what to believe anymore. I just really knew that I was miserable. I did not know how to understand my feelings whatsoever. I was extremely, extremely angry, and my relationships with my parents were terrible. I didn't feel comfortable with my mom just as much as I didn't feel comfortable with my dad, for very different reasons. And so I finally felt comfortable to ask that same person that handed me a pamphlet to be my sponsor, and she said yes. And we started the steps. And at that time, I was smoking pot all the time. I was having really big difficulties. I had bought a business, and I was just, it was not going well for me being a business owner. And I just thought, you know what? What the hell? I don't know what else to do. I really like the content of what I'm listening to. And at least for the first, I would say, I remember having conversations with my sponsor saying, I can't see being in this forever. I can't see sticking with this. I don't know how this is going to go long term. Like, I don't know if I will. And through it all, I look back and I know that I wasn't making that choice. God was really making that choice for me. And it was because it's what I really needed. The person I am today is very, very different from the person I was when I first stepped in. And it's actually something I sat down and journaled on before I came here tonight, because it's so easy to forget the little accomplishments. And that was the first thing I wrote, was it's easy to look over all the little changes, but it's all those tiny little changes that come into this big thing of, oh my gosh, I'm not the same person. And so I started my steps, and step one, to me, when I thought about being powerless over my childhood, I really felt like, I couldn't do anything. My dad's an alcoholic. My mom is a codependent, like, rageaholic at times. And I just knew my life was unmanageable. And step two and three were really hard. And I work on step 2, 3, and 11 so much in my life, and I've finished my steps, but this last week I get constantly reminded that I've been taught self-sufficiency, and I don't want to let it go at all. And so I stayed a while, I remember, on step 2 and 3, and at that time I was trying to figure out, during those first three steps, am I an alcoholic? Like, if my dad's an alcoholic, I could totally be an alcoholic. And throughout my early 20s, I chose not to participate much in drinking. I went out when I was 21 for literally a very controlled amount of time, like probably like 8 months or something, and like, okay, I'm only 21 once, I can go out, I can do this, always count how much you're drinking, always know what you're doing. And I prided myself on that, not realizing that I was just being obsessive controlling over something because I was so scared to, what I found out with my sponsor was I was so scared to end up in an AA meeting. I didn't want to go to them anymore. I'd been to enough of them. So when she asked me, I was like, I just don't want to go. She's like, the people are there are really nice. Like, like it's not that bad at all. It's pretty nice. So, so it was funny because I felt like for the first time at like, I don't know, mid-20s when I came into ACA, that I was actually getting to explore and experiment. And I had a friend, like one, that I was really trusting with. And I did that all over again. And I did it in a way that was like, I'm going to try and not be so scared of what it would be like to sit at a bar with somebody and have a drink, because I don't want to... my not drinking or not doing anything was all based out of just complete fear of alcoholism that I also didn't believe was true. And so through ACA and through my experience of being here and working with a sponsor and working with steps allowed me to really learn about me and go out and have a ton of fun. I had great time. And I also still came back to the same thing that I'm not an alcoholic and I don't like drinking and I never did. And that was okay. And I think that's the part, like really thinking about it right here while talking to you all, is that's the part when I realized, like, this is a really safe place. I can do whatever it is that I need to do to grow and to heal, and no one's judging me. And no one's telling me what to do, and I have support, and I have guidance, and I have people to go to, and so it was really interesting because, like, around my fourth step, which my fourth step was a lot harder than I thought. When I started my first step, I was like, okay, so what homework do you have for me? What am I supposed to do? And my sponsor's like, you'll really like the fourth step, but for now you get to just go and live. Like, you get to pull out the pen and paper at the fourth step and it'll be great. But when I got there, it was not. I did not want to do it. And it was a lot of hang-ups of, am I doing this right? And just a lot of criticism when I look back on what am I doing. And really, it doesn't matter. It's just write it down, just get it on paper. Even if it's not a part of your fourth step, it's still really good, I'm finding, to journal and to get out whatever things are wanting to go on paper anyways. But in that fourth step time, I actually really kind of, what felt like at the time was I kind of just went MIA from doing it. But really, it was again reminded by my sponsor, which, let me tell you, it's super important to have a sponsor that you are really comfortable with, and you'll feel it. It's a really wonderful feeling. I feel really, really blessed. But it was funny because I remember also calling her and being like, I don't know, I feel like I'm having trouble writing this. I don't know what I'm doing. And her just being like, well, are you still going to your meetings? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, okay, and you still have your commitment? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, okay, you're okay. Like, you're not, like, bailing. It can be a really hard step. And through that time, I asked a lot of people. I'm like, how was it for you? And I remember one person was like, so I would pull it out of my drawer, and I would write, like, a few things, and I would put away for, like, 6 months. The beauty of this program, your healing and your recovery is all based on you and what your needs are, what your relationship is with your sponsor, and what your relationship is with your higher power. And so for me, was really interesting because during that period, I decided this whole pot smoking thing that I had been doing for like 10 years, or not 10 years, yeah, I don't know, anyways, at the time, needed to, really, that's, the time was all like whoosh together, I think it was 10 years, but it needed to stop, and that was real powerlessness for me. That was real powerlessness in my current life. It was really easy to see my powerlessness in my past life. This was my childhood. This was what I couldn't control. Of course I couldn't. I was little, and you have to do what your parents say. And so things that have changed along, you know, my recovery are I asked for help with that, and it was really, really amazing. I'll be a year sober, and when I chose to stop that, I decided I'm just going to stop, I guess, everything, which would have only been alcohol as well, but I didn't like alcohol, so why not? So for me, I have a little app counter thing, but I'm somewhere around like 9 months right now. And that's huge. I didn't know how I was going to ever stop smoking pot. And to do it during my fourth step, like, time, fourth step, fifth step time was like, I don't know. That's a miracle in itself. And I smoked because of my ACA stuff. I smoked because no one taught me how to feel feelings, and no one taught me that I don't have to be mad at people for making their own life choices. You know, my dad being an alcoholic doesn't mean I have to be miserable. My mom living a dysfunctional life does not have to be, like, a part of what makes me happy or not. And that just did not exist. The way that, especially when I think about this with my mom and the dysfunction, there's so many types of dysfunction. I'll just go kind of back a little bit. My mom was raised by two immigrant families that came here, or two people that were immigrants that came here from Greece, and my grandfather was a recent Holocaust survivor when they came here. And so the amount of fear and the amount of guilt and shame and survivor's guilt and anger and resentment, and my grandfather didn't look at anything. He never talked about it. He was not one of those people that was sitting in the museum talking to the kids. He was just like 0 to 100 angry, and pretty generally, like, he seems like a really sweet guy, and actually he really is. He seems like he's not so pessimistic, but to me, when I listen to him, he's super pessimistic, and I actually don't know what he seems like. It's to me, that's what I see in him, and it got transferred to my mom, and my grandmother went through hell. I'm sure it was both of them went through that, and went through that kind of hell that they brought on to each other, and they brought it on to their kids. And so that's what my mom was raised in. And when my mom raised me, I can tell the difference because I've been around my grandparents, and thank God, but they didn't teach her how to care for herself, and that she was smart, and that she could have feelings, and that she could get past anger and resentment. And I definitely feel like, you know, I was told nice things by my mom as a kid. I had a lot of sweet moments with her, but the things that lacked, really lacked, and the codependency part was so huge that I was taught. And and for my dad, his dad died of alcoholism when he was 11, and his brother died of addiction and alcoholism. And I'm really surprised my dad's not died from alcoholism at this point. And so for me, pot was pot was the thing I did when I was happy. It was the thing that I did when I was sad. It was the thing that I did because it was the only thing I could grasp onto that just dulled the world that I felt like I had to live in. I felt really stuck for a really long time. Ever since I was 18, it was like, oh my God, this? Like, I have been waiting for this? What? Okay, so cool, I can wear makeup now. But other than that, I was just like, this is really gnarly and I don't really want to deal with this. And I got to put all that on paper with my fourth step and I started with my resentments. It was really, that was the place for me to start because it was like, I'm mad. I am mad at just so many things. And I was taught to be mad and I was taught that I am justified in being mad. And it was, I want to say it was a cathartic process, but it was really, really annoying. I was mad that I even had to write the fourth step. I was mad that I was doing 12 step in general. I'm like, why didn't I have a family that just was normal and I didn't have to end up in these rooms? And when I say that, I really like all of you. I don't even know you. Some of you I've never even met. But I know that there's that cool bond that we have of just gentleness and love and respect that there's nothing like it. I've never been any place in the world where I felt like that immediately with people. And it gets so real so fast that you can have that in here. So I did my fifth step at the beach. Once I was finished with my fourth, I finally finished it. And I didn't know I was finished. You never want to be done. It's like, especially when I'm like obsessive compulsive, I'm like, it's not done. It's never going to be done. But it was as done as it was going to be for that point. And so I did my fifth step. And it was, I really remember, it was so nice to be sitting at the beach and to be with a person that I really trusted and to go through these things that I thought would be so scary and to learn about myself and to, because for me, a lot of it, I don't judge myself, or I judge myself. So when I'm looking at it, I'm looking at these things as judgments, where somebody on the other side of me could be like, you know, no, you were just really scared. You didn't know what was going on. And I got to learn in that fifth step so, so, so much about myself. And it made it so that I have this really good self-awareness that's really helpful. Like, the self-awareness has helped me in my business. It's helped me in my personal life with my family and my friends. It's just been amazing to see that. And to not be scared of it, and to learn to just accept myself for who I am. And going on to my sixth step, I didn't understand what it meant between, actually I'm going to go back to my fifth step. We were sitting at the beach, and this whole thing was so crazy. We're sitting by the bluff area, and the snake literally just falls down. And we screamed. It was just, it was a whole scene. Like, everybody down the beach was looking at us because it was just crazy. And it was under my bag. And, like, we were just losing our minds on this, this snake. And snakes seem to be a part of what's come up. And it's the symbolism I found out is shedding the skin. The snake sheds skin and that healing process through it, and that was literally what I was doing. I was doing my fifth step, shedding all that stuff, and that snake scared the crap out of us. We were like, do we move? Do we sit back down? What do we, okay, we need to reevaluate. but the humor in it, like, I can do step work and it can also be funny. Like, I can, I, it's, it doesn't have to be this serious thing. I was a very serious person too, and I still have that part of me, but learning that I could also be in serious situations and it can be light was really helpful as well. So many amazing things I've gotten from this process. And my seventh step, that's a process. That's, some things have left quickly and some things haven't, and some things have integrated really well and some things are still integrating. And self-sufficiency just really wants to stay on board, and I'm really constantly working on that. And then my eighth step became willing to make amends to people, and I was really freaked out by this step. I thought, it just, again, it's talking to people. I thought I was going to have to go talk to a bunch of people and that I was just going to be super nervous. And then in doing it and writing the list and then I'm getting a little confused with it. But in finally showing my list to my sponsor, I was so surprised that, like, I had, like, everybody on the just forgive list instead of going up and talking to them, including myself and including God, and that there wasn't really anybody that I had to talk to, and the people that I had to do anything with was a living amends of just, you know, showing them by action. There was no need to say anything, and that was like so relieving, and also like that's the work I'm continuously doing. I'm continuously learning how to forgive. And it's happening, and it's kind of happening on its own. I'm not even aware that it's been happening because I notice situations that have been much easier for me. And so my 10th step of doing daily inventories, that a lot to me is a lot of that self-awareness that I'm really grateful that I got through here. My 11th step has been extremely challenging. Coming to accept that there was a God of my understanding that I can turn my life, my will and my life over to, that I was okay with. I was able to get there. And then when I got to my 11th step, it started with just prayer. I just had to become comfortable talking to God. And that took a really long time. It was really awkward and really uncomfortable, and I'm still working on it. It's gotten so much better, and that's where it's just a practice. That's what we learn here. It's a new practice of a way of living that's different than what we've been doing, and what we've been doing hasn't been working, so why not try something new? So the meditation, I did some, and I'm again still working on that. And this last week of not being able to move for a few days, I was forced to, like, I felt the whole meditate or die thing that AA has. like, pray, meditate, or, like, just, you're not gonna be able to get in contact with your higher power, and that's not a good place to be in. And I'm sure I've heard it said, but I'll repeat it or say it in my own way, is that one of the cool memories that I have of my dad is his spiritual person said to him, there are as many ways to meditate as there are grains of sand on the earth. And so I'm really now more dedicated than ever looking for my ways of meditation. And it's working for me now too, because I'm so much more comfortable praying than I wasn't before. So without that prayer part, the meditating part just felt like I just couldn't feel anything. I couldn't, it was like getting a sponsor and telling somebody your fifth step. You have to be willing to talk to get where you need to be. And so that's been really wonderful. And it's a real gift. It's a really weird feeling when you meditate and pray and journal. And like, I experienced it in the last few days, and including today, of just like, I did this cool thing today where I was praying and I was meditating and I was journaling and I was putting prayers for my God box, like all simultaneously. And it was awesome. I felt really, really awesome, and I started my day feeling really, really freaked out because I couldn't find a pair of shoes that I could put on my foot to come here tonight. And so it was just like, by the end of it, I spent time with my mom today, which my relationship with my mom has been really hard. We are like olive oil and water trying to sit next to one another. Like, we really love one another, but it's like super awkward, uncomfortable. And we like chilled today, and that's amazing. And that's part of this program. That's all like a part of what I got from coming here. I'm just so grateful. And so I guess step 12 for me, that's the part that kept me here. The doing the service work and the sharing it with other people, I would have to say from the beginning, that's what kept me here, is wanting to talk to people, wanting to have service commitments, wanting to find a sponsor and eventually be a sponsor. That's that part of it. It's so easy for the little things to slip by, and then when you talk to somebody and they share with you what's going on with them. I had this happen the other day. I got a phone call and things were coming out of my mouth that I just was like, that's so good. That person probably really needs to hear that. But it's from coming here. It's from doing this work. And it's so wonderful because we're all healing here together, so we just get to help people heal and become happier in their lives and be able to enjoy their lives. And I really learned to enjoy my life now, which I didn't know how to have more than one friend at a time. I didn't know how to enjoy my life. I didn't know how to have a different perspective on things. I didn't know how to communicate my needs. I didn't know that I had needs. I didn't know that I didn't get what I needed as a kid. I didn't know that I could have boundaries and other people don't have to like them. I didn't know that in order to keep a boundary, I had to keep it. I couldn't rely on others to keep that boundary. There's so many things I didn't know and that I didn't like about myself before I came here. And it's so amazing. It's so, so amazing. And I'm beyond grateful. I'm beyond grateful. And I'm really glad that, you know, it's like literally the circle as it goes around. I've come full circle of like not even believing that alcoholism was a disease to I'm going to pick up the big book like a month ago or so, decided that I was going to pick it up and start reading it. Like, I would have never done that before. And there is a line in there that I'm like, I wish somebody would have shown me this a long time ago, because it literally spelled it out for me that it is a disease. My dad doesn't hate me or doesn't want to be a good dad. He has his own spiritual sickness. And I'm really, really, really glad that I don't come from a place of anger with him anymore. Where I stand with him now is that I still can't talk to him, and he still tries desperately to be a part of my life. And I've had to make really tough decisions, like that whole you have to keep your own boundary thing, I had to change my number. Like, I did not want to do that, but it came down to self-protection. I have to be my own loving parent. And learning to be my own loving parent means even if you don't want to do something, but it's the right thing to do to get what you really need, and you know that that's your need, you do it. And I have oddly run into him, and I have had to give him a call, and instead of doing what I've done previously, which is yell at him and just be really mean and angry, I've just been direct and to the point and simple and short and just like, this is what I need, this is what I can't do, okay, talk to you later. Like, I was blown away when that happened. It was like an outer body experience. I was like, what? And my mom was there, and like, I'm like, how did this not just explode in my face? But it didn't. And there's so many gifts, and I can't even imagine what's to come. If all of this has happened so far, doing this is such a great reminder to understand for myself what I've done and what I've accomplished, because it's so easy for me to overlook it all. I've always done that. Nothing's ever been enough, and I always have a to-do list that's never ending, and I am enough, and I've done enough, and I have enough. And I learned that through coming to recovery rooms, and it's just such amazing experience. For anyone who's new, it's talk to the people that you like what they share. Talk to the people that you like their smile. Talk to whoever you feel comfortable with. They care and they want to listen. And your emotions can't kill you. As much as they feel like they're going to kill you a lot, they're not going to. And no matter what your childhood experience was, what matters is what you do with it now. It makes all the difference in the world to start focusing on yourself instead of focusing on everything else that was ever done or everything else that anybody was doing. And it's a practice, and I'm not perfect, and one of the openings was like, we're human beings. I don't know what else it said, but that's what we are. We're human beings just working together to live a really wonderful life. And so I really appreciate you asking me to share. And thank you. Thanks.